Esto es Rise and Shine, un momento de tranquilidad, música y muy buenas charlas.
Welcome back here to Urbana FM, Rise and Shine, Al Adams at the microphone, talking about the new and the old, new directions, using older ingredients, maybe in older recipes too. Something new here in Argentine food, which has been up until fairly recently, a fairly homogeneous, standardized fare, in restaurants at least. Good quality at that, but nonetheless, who am I to say? I mean, the people who really can say are to my two guests, Dan Perelman, owner of Salt Shaker, a closed-door restaurant, and a blog writer, beautifully written blog, and Martin Molteni, who is the owner, proprietor, and chef of Pura Tierra in Belgrano. And we're talking about ingredients, and I would just ask you, Martin, are you right now, I mean today or last week, are you using something new?
Now we are using, we have the season of the piñones. The piñón de Araucaria is the fruit of the of a tree.
Piñón nuts.
Yes.
Oh, I love them.
It's pine nuts, but bigger than the small what? One, the Italian.
I never seen one that big. Yes, how big is it, like 2 inches?
Something like that, yes.
When what do you do with that?
Yeah, and then you have to boil it. You have to boil it. No, we fry everything here. It's true. It's true. A lot of fry
maybe
food.
You can do a piñone
milanese.
we have to pan it. We will see. But no, you have to boil it because it's harder than the small one. Mm-hmm. And then you can roast it or you can make a flour out of it and make some bread or some cookies.
And you've added that item to your menu?
We use it as a vegetable, mm-hmm. actually.
Would you have some on hand next week?
Probably.
I think I'll come by.
Okay,
it'll be a
pleasure.
A house guest from Australia.
Yes. Actually, also, you get a lot of different potatoes in different part of the years, mm-hmm. so because they collect them in season, because it's not something industrial, but it's something more traditional, you know, families working and collecting their crops of potatoes in the north of Argentina, you know, in the 2,000 meters of altitude. So you get, you know, we get something like 25 to 30 varieties of different potatoes.
Really?
During all the time of the year. It's pretty interesting.
They say in olden days in Peru, there were something like 500 different varieties
of course.
Potatoes.
I think there still are. I mean, if you go to Peru now, especially in the Andes, you see hundreds. You go to a market, and there are literally hundreds of
square,
different varieties.
Square, purple, every color of the rainbow.
Every color you can think of.
The taste
varies from very vegetable to very sweet. Starchy to sweet to to amazing range of things that we don't think about when it comes to potato.
Can you do potato souffle?
Yes, but with those potatoes,
like
it's more difficult.
Like the Palacio de Papas Fritas?
Never tried. We probably have to, but no, you can do a lot of different stuff and get new flavors out of that because we really don't know that product, you know? So we are really trying to prepare new things and get new flavors out of those.
Well, I guess looking back, I mean, if you buy the point that the restaurant fare is, by and large, pretty homogeneous here, and then you look for the answers. Why is that? And I suppose one line of argument would be it's supply and demand. If there's no demand for change, then you're just going to continue to get the same stuff. And another line is the teachers, the chef schools. And I suppose the third line is the difficulty of getting ingredients and maybe the isolation of the country. Basically, would you say those are the three reasons why there's been so little change until recently here?
Yes, I think you really have to have the customer looking for new things so you can change. If they don't ask you to
there's
change...
There's no demand.
Yes, you can change.
Well, I think that's true, and you know, that may be a lot of the influence of the huge influx of an expatriate population since the crash in 2000-2001. But I think it's also, again, the internet and people starting to travel and go places and discovering that there are flavors out there that they want to try and that they'd like to be able to have back here.
I mean, Argentines travel a lot in the period of good old days of Demi Dos, pizza and champagne, you know?
Yes, but where did they travel to? I think that's changed.
Burgerland, maybe McDonald's, where you have so many McDonald's down here.
I mean, I don't think if you went back 20 or 30 years that you would have found someone like Martin going off to Australia to explore. He would have gone to Paris or to New York or to London or something to study because there weren't other options that were considered the right way to do it.
Ingredients. You think because of the isolation of the country, basically, it's hard to get your hands on exciting new foreign ingredients.
It's a big country. So it's difficult to transport the different products from the areas, you know, where you get them fresh. You don't have a lot of flying connections too. You know, in Argentina, to travel, you have to come to Buenos Aires and go to the north, and come back to Buenos Aires and go to the south. You cannot go straight from north to south.
I wonder why that is.
I don't know.
You just have to come, don't you?
Yes.
You know, Argentina is one of the great countries of the world for civil aviation. I mean, if you're ever going to... Australia is the other one, and the United States, a huge landmass. You have to have civil aircraft flying all over the place, and it's undeveloped. You know, the days of Antoine Saint-Exupéry, for example, Little Prince and all of that. He was the great French aviator that pioneered airmail routes over the Andes in those days. And the teachers here. I mean, are there teachers of teachers? Can you kind of affect the curriculum and the spirit of teaching culinary schools here? And how would you do that?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to judge because I didn't go to school here, although I take classes here and there from different people.
And you teach yourself.
And I teach myself, but I'm not teaching Argentine cuisine generally. So my sense, though, as I've been in different schools, is that there is a real focus on teaching the traditional basics. You know, I've joked about it with friends that, you know, that every student who goes through culinary school here gets the exact same set of recipes and they don't learn anything but that. I don't know that that's actually accurate.
You're nodding your head.
He's nodding his head, so maybe it is accurate and it's not just a perception. But I think it's if you teach people that way as opposed to teaching people techniques... You know, that was one of the things that I was very blessed to go through was I went to a culinary school that taught technique rather than recipes. But I think here my sense is there's a lot more emphasis on recipes and this is the way it is.
And also, sorry, but no? Culinary schools started 20 years ago, so it's a new thing, it's a new career. So we don't have history
really?
On that.
Really?
Yes. We didn't have preparation.
So many schools. I mean, the first so many schools about 1990.
Well, later, the Sommelier Association here, I don't want to say the wrong year, but I think it's less, they're just around 10 years old.
The first one was on the, something like 1990s or something.
We
like
had
that.
The lady who runs Sommelier Escuela de Argentina in here. Yes. And I was quite surprised. The same then with gastronomic schools.
Yes.
Very recent phenomenon.
Of course.
What's the oldest one here?
The oldest one is probably the Bue Trainer, a school of who is in Ezeiza. And it started, I think, in the 1990s, actually.
What's it called?
The Bue Trainer. Because you have the Bue Catering in the same area that is a Swiss company, actually, who opened the school to educate all the cooks from different restaurants.
Near the Mercado.
Yes, of course.
Okay, take another brief break here for music. Cool, lively, mellow music from Urbana FM. We'll be right back.
Cost me a quarter, and the second dance cost me my heart. Now I'm here on this bar stool, like a circle. It ends where it starts, and it goes something like this. Well, I ain't seen you
drink all night, and my eyes are black, cause I fought all night. I come stumbling home to sleep alone, and it's alright, yeah, it's alright, cause it's hard to tell what it is, what it's not, until it is something that you ain't got. It's something you ain't got. It's something you ain't got. It's something you ain't got.
Esto es Rise and Shine.
Welcome back to Rise and Shine, 89.5 FM on your dial, Urbana FM. I'm Al Adams at the mic, bringing you a show this morning about food, new food directions in Argentina. And with us, Dan Perelman, well, two chefs, Dan Perelman, who is the owner, operator, and guru of Salt Shaker, Closed Door Restaurant, also a terrific blog, and Martin Molteni, who is the owner and inspiration of the Pura Tierra in Belgrano, and one of the, as we say, young Turks of Argentine cuisine. A young Turk is a phrase from history to describe the new leadership in the Ottoman Empire that took over just before World War I, and the Turks entered that with great mistakes. But anyway, so much for young Turks. They do make mistakes. Have you made a mistake?
Of course.
What would be your biggest mistake that you care to talk about on the show?
Well, I think you need a preparation to be a chef. No, we are cooks and we try to develop our skills, but you are always trying, you know, new things. Or a good thing is that you don't have to try with your customers. No,
you don't.
You don't. Yeah, it's better if you try in the kitchen and then you.
Otherwise, it comes back to you. Yes. I don't like this. What have you done to my food?
No, and but you really, I mean, it takes a long time of preparation to be a good cook. So
sure.
We have to take time, and most of the time, when young guys come out of the school, the culinary school, they want to be chef straight away. So you really have to wait. You know, you have to prepare yourself, and you have to work a lot. So
patience. Do you have a list of people that come in and kind of sample your experiments?
Not really.
Dan, does Dan come in sometimes? Guinea pigs?
Yeah.
Could you add me here, Al Adams?
We try a lot with him, when he comes to the restaurant. We try different things because we know he loves food, and because when we cook for cooks, you know, and we love to cook to people who really enjoy
it. Try a filet pignon nut, the big thin milanesa.
I'm still thinking about the milanesa idea.
I am. Well, you mentioned a number of very interesting things there, Martin, about the profession of being a chef and the importance of patience and of preparation, because a lot of the work is just scut work. It's scut work. We say gopher work. Chopping vegetables, standing on your feet for 12 hours a day, chopping vegetables, preparing the stuff. And younger chefs, debutante chefs, are they prepared by their teachers for this period of apprenticeship? Psychologically, emotionally, like, you know, look, kid, You're not going to go anywhere for about 5 years, maybe longer. So forget it. You're not going to be chef for a while unless you get through this stage. Do you think they're adequately prepared?
I think we have to be more realistic when we study cookery, actually, you know, that and the school has in some way the responsibility to tell them what is all this about, you know, because it's a really hard work to be a cook and it's really hard to succeed in this area. So you really have to be prepared and to know what are you going to find.
And the teachers have to be honest with the young people instead of dangling these ambitions, right, in front of them.
Most of the time they don't have the experience too because it's a new area. So the teachers are not really well prepared, or they, even if they are really well prepared in the technique part, they don't have the hands-on work, you know. I mean, they don't have the experience in different kitchens. So that's the problem that we want to overcome, that problem with the time. But we need teachers to go to the kitchens, work, and then go back to the school, you know?
Yes, that communication between the restaurants and the teachers in the schools.
It's very important.
The restaurants, Dan?
Well, I think it, almost what he's alluding to is sort of the old classic phrase, you know, those who can't do teach. You know, is that there's a certain level of...
The phrase is, those who can't do work for the government.
Well, there's that too.
In the United States. I'm not talking about anywhere else.
Yes, there's that too. But there's, you know, I think that he may very well be right. I mean, I know that when I went to culinary school, about half of the teachers who I had never actually worked in a restaurant.
Really? Well,
the other half, thankfully, had. When that's the case, they may know their techniques, as he said, but it's very hard to expect them to prepare people for what's the reality of a day-to-day job of, you know, as I say, you know, 7 days a week, 14 hours a day was a typical day in a New York restaurant, or a typical week in a New York restaurant.
Is there a practice of restaurants communicating with the school saying, look, chum, these are idiots you're sending me. Can you teach somebody something new? Because the people who come to my restaurant want something new. Is there feedback? Is there that tradition, or people just kind of mousy and everyone stays in their corner?
We have a small restaurant, but we really have to select people, you know. Every time we are looking for a new one, we try to interview them very hard with long interviews in order to pick the right one, because it's very difficult.
I'll take a brief break here for a word from our sponsors. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Ya volvemos con Rise and Shine. Conversaciones en clave íntima.